everyday witches emerge from the shadows of secrecy. Broom closets are flinging open and witches are taking flight. Whether you are hiding in your cozy closet or flying with pride, stay for a spell as Witch Casting with Theodora Pendragon and her guests share magical moments, stir the cauldron, and debunk misinformation and misconceptions about paganism, witches, and our wonderful world of magic.
Hello, everyone. I'm Theodora Pendragon, and here we are with another episode with a special guest, and her name is Mawia Bhumani. Welcome, Mawia.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm Mawia Bhumani, like you said. I'm from New Orleans, Louisiana. I grew up in a household where I could see spirits at a very young age, probably about the age of 5 years old. My mother was very into astrology and tarot. So she also could see spirits at a young age. And so in our culture, the whole idea is if you were born with a veil of skin or that caul over your eyes, that you were able to see spirits. And so she was able to sort of, you know, walk me through how to handle that so that I wouldn't be afraid. Definitely, I was attending Catholic school at the time. So the idea was that you don't go and tell the nuns that you see spirits, you know. And so just from that time, it was like about, you know, how to have time to be a child, as well as how to have time to figure out what it is that they need and how you could help them, along with the assistance of my mother. So, you know, went through life, you know, really dabbling in the metaphysics. And I was initiated into Ifa later on in life. But my family background is in hoodoo. The background is in Vodun. So all of those things were just commonplace. And it wasn't really a question of, you know, how do we do these things? It just was natural. It was what you did. You know, it was an everyday thing, just like, you know, drinking water and eating.
You're my first person who's practiced hoodoo. Can you tell us about practicing hoodoo? Like, are there certain rules? Because you said you were initiated.
Well, I was initiated to Ifa, which is a totally different other system. Well, hoodoo, there is no initiation into that. You know, when we think about hoodoo culturally, what we always talk about is all of these different African people coming, you know, being brought over to the New World, and these sensibilities, you know, this mixture of people. First, you had groups of people from one part of the world of Africa, and they could communicate. Right. Naturally. And so they could communicate their the fact that they needed to be free so they could cause insurrections. So when you start mixing people from different other places, the language barriers are definitely there. But also with that, you have different ways of approaching spirit. And so as far as with hoodoo, it's a mixture of all of those different regions of Africa with Native American influences, as well as what was already there from Western magic. So it was always about liberation. Hoodoo is liberation magic. It is revolutionary magic. I always say the Africans who were enslaved did not have, you know, a doctor to tend to them. They didn't have a therapist to tend to them. So hoodoo became that agent of all of those things. It became a protector, as well as it became a way of fighting against what you were, what was subjugating you. So when we talk about it as a folk magic, it is Black people's folk magic, you know, in a sense. I always tell people that we all have folk magic that is culturally ours. And hoodoo is culturally a Black person's folk magic because it stemmed out of that need to be liberated. Like I say, there's no initiation to that. So you would have people who would go to church and they would still practice hoodoo. You know, they would be Baptist, they'd be Catholic, but they still at the basis, at the very basis of their survival, hoodoo was always there. You know, the midwives, or the roof workers, the conjurers, they always went back to the essence of hoodoo, because when you had nothing else, you had those people that you could go to and offer them, you know, food from your garden, you know, a meal that you prepared as payment. where you couldn't do that in traditional world when you're paying your doctor. He doesn't want a meal, you know, or a bottle of wine or something like that as your payment. So, yeah. So, you know, when we think about Vodun or Voodoo and we think about Ifa, Santeria and all those other practices, there are initiations that go into those. And so there are specific rites that you have to go through before you can say that you are a practitioner of those different other systems. So hoodoo is much more open with that. So even with those systems, you still have people who are inherently hoodoo.
Would you say it's a religion or a practice?
I would say it's a practice because of the fact that you have people who do use the Bible as part of it, but you have people who also use whatever practices they're in. Like if you are practice Santeria, then you may still use some of those basic symbols or symbolisms in your hoodoo. So it's more of a practice because it allows for all of that to be a part of it. So it's not real dogmatic about you have to just do this, you know, and that's what makes it, I think, so beautiful. You know what I'm saying? Because when you think about all of the people from all of these different regions of the South, you know, where their ancestors came from, there are different tools that they would use, you know, for some of the same things that you might think of in your area. Somebody else may be using something different. So it's more of a practice. Yeah.
Can anybody practice hoodoo?
Well, the way that I've been taught, because it is Black people's liberation magic, we all have folk magic. And so there are overlaps in folk magic. So I say to people, you know, just like working with playing cards, folk magic wise, we all can do that. But then when we start to delve into deities and hoodoo, like Lama Dama, whose her statue represents, you know, an African person who no longer is able to birth children on the plantation. So she works inside the house, the big house, and she transports information to the other enslaved people so that they can reach freedom. So that might be somebody that you wouldn't want to work with if you're not a person of African descent. And so for me, I've always been taught because it is liberation magic, it is inherently Black people's magic. We all have folk magic. You just have to find the folk magic that works for you. There are overlaps, like I say, with playing cards and dowsing rods and things like that. But you get tricky when you start to want to, I always say, force yourself on a practice. And so you don't want to do that. I would examine my own, if I was somebody who wasn't a person of African descent, you know, what is it that I can use from my own background of folk magic, you know, that works for me? And it doesn't have to be hoodoo. It's okay.
Have you been wanting to ride your broom like you stole it, rather than hiding in the shadows? Theodora Pendragon is here to help your magic shine, whether you want to show the world your subtle sparkle or you really want to light your fire. Visit Theodora's online store at witchcasting.shop. That's witchcasting.shop. Remember, there's never been a better time to be a witch.
You wrote a book,
Conjuring the Calabash, Empowering Women with Hoodoo, Spells, and Magic. Yes.
What inspired you to write this book?
Well, during the pandemic, even before the pandemic, I was working with a lot of clients, males and females, mostly people of color. And, you know, when the pandemic happened, there were lots of people who were feeling that they, you know, that they really couldn't talk to preachers and things like that. They were at home. You know, what are they? You're seeing all this violence on TV that's happening to Black and brown people. How do they deal with it? You know, how do they cope spiritually, emotionally? You know, what are they going to do? And so as I worked with people and we would talk about it and we would have, you know, study sessions and things like that, I found myself, you know, just documenting my own feelings after even a session with individuals. And so I would talk to them, I would call them back, and we would talk about, you know, using some of this information. What if I wrote a book? You know, is it okay to talk about some of these things? And so everybody was really like, yeah, because, you know, I mean, I'm feeling this. You know, we're talking in group and people are feeling these same things. So let's reach a wider audience. So for me, it was really about, you know, trying to help people of color feel like, you know, they weren't just being boxed in, you know, that they had a place where they could really spiritually heal themselves. It's different. And I think for a lot of people, as they were, as we were in lockdown and they couldn't go to church or, you know, they couldn't go to their spiritual centers and places like that, they felt that they felt a little bit abandoned, you know? And so I think for me, writing the book just gave them the idea, the feeling, the sensation that somebody hears them and that they can still be grounded and that they can still have a practice and be in control of it themselves. They didn't really need to have a preacher or a priest or anybody right there facilitating every step of the way for them. They could be in charge of that themselves. And so I think when we talk about women and how our goal is to be a nurturers, you know, it just felt like it was the right thing to do to bring it from a female standpoint of nurturing. And then it branches out. So we still include spells in there for men. There are things in there for, you know, our elders and even our children, you know. And so once we're able to nurture everybody, then we can probably start to, you know, see how we can balance out the world. So that was my goal, to get women to be nurtured, to get women to feel as though they're heard and that they can really work with their families, and then to, you know, sort of branch out and make it a worldwide thing, hopefully.
Tell us about some of the magical topics included in your book. Hoodoo spells and magic. That sounds very intriguing.
So, you know, we deal with naturally with love, breakups and things like that. You know, just how to use that sexual energy. I think for a lot of African Americans, you know, even the thought of sex magic, we, you know, it's sort of like, oh my God, taboo, you know, but I always felt that outside of just the sensation of those orgasms, we should be using it, you know, we should be using those spaces to facilitate change within our own lives. So I talk a lot about using it to better yourself, as well as to, you know, think about some changes that you may want to make within your community. And if we're in unison with other individuals who are having glorious orgasms, right, and using them, then we can all evoke that change. So those are some of the things I talk about. I talk about children with night terrors and things like that, and bullying. And even since we are such a computer age now, right, and especially with our children, with the young people, you rarely use books in schools anymore. You know, everything is, you know, computerized. But, you know, even with that, you know, children are still trying to find ways to, you know, make friends and things like that. And they don't always make the best choices because they're young people. And so how can we protect them from cyberbullying and all those kind of things? And even ourselves, because, you know, even as adults, we get trolls and we get people in our spaces who want to, you know, just put out all this negative information. So some of those things can help us as well. So I try to look at avenues of workings that, you know, are customary to us. We always think about love and breakup and things like that. But also, how can we approach dealing with our elders? A lot of us are taking care of parents, you know, who are aging. You know, we need to, you know, have our energy replenished, as well as we need to make it a space of ease for them as they go through, you know, their life and moving towards their transition.
What did you learn when writing the book?
I guess I learned how difficult it was. Mostly about how technology has changed our ideas about how we approach each other. People don't really talk to each other a lot, you know, and so they have all of these preconceived notions, you know, about relationships, but we're not really creating time for relationships. And so in writing the book, I guess one of my biggest ideas was, our thoughts was centered around, you know, are people still reading, you know, books, you know, because oftentimes, you know, I see, I was listening the other day, someone posted that people are going on TikTok to find spells, but they're asking AI to write spells. Right. They're going to AI and asking AI to write them a spell for something.
What are your thoughts on that?
Being a teacher as well, and I know people have been doing it to write papers, right? Write, you know, term papers and things like that. And it's not your words. It's not your work. And in terms of spell work, I just feel like I wouldn't trust that. I just don't feel like a computer knows exactly what it is that I really want and need, and how reliant on that should I be? You know, I just don't trust it, you know? And so, but I think because we've become such a computer age, you know, of people, everything is technology driven. I learned that, you know, people really have to be brought into the story. They really have to feel that it applies to them. So I try to, as much as I talk about myself and my own journey, I try to also talk about some of the people that I've met, you know, not mentioning them by name, of course, but their theme centered around them. Because I think that a lot of that is are things that I found overlapping as I talked to clients. So I felt like that is something that would really draw people in, as well as music. You know, I there's a playlist to go with the book on Spotify. And, you know, so I always think that that also pulls people in, because I always tell clients, look, you know, find a song on there that resonates with you. So even after you've done your work or you use it while you're working, you know, you can still play it in your car and it'll still empower you. You know, it'll keep you in that moment of resonation with your working. So for me, I just found out you have to have different ways of reaching people, right? And we all love to listen to our music. So I thought, bam, pull that into it. And it's not, you know, traditional songs that you would think you would work with. It's songs that we all listen to, right? Music that we like. You know, there's pop music. There's all kinds of music on there, but you can use it in your workings. And there's the songs that I've used in my workings and songs that I've talked to clients about and they've used in their workings. And so I just felt like, you know, you have to have many avenues to reach people. A lot of people have said, you know, I do the work, I listen to the song, and I on my way to work, I'm listening to the song and I'm really tuned in and I really feel like, you know, I'm at the point where I'm heightening my magic.
Heightening your magic. I like that. You have a list of your playlist?
I don't have it with me right now, but if you could,
but it's in a book?
It's yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's the same title of the book. It's the playlist. So when you go to Spotify, you know, it's the same title. There's meditations there. There are, you know, just some brown noise. Sometimes, you know, I'm talking to clients and clients who are, you know, ADHD and they were like, how do I tune in? So there's lots of things for lots of different people, you know, and I just try to incorporate that so that, you know, no one can feel left out. You know, you want to just listen to the playlist and feel like, okay, I'm good. I'm, you know, I'm centering myself. I'll do that.
How did you create your playlist for us to access on Spotify?
Actually, in conjunction with my husband who loves Spotify. So I documented a lot of songs that I use when I do my work. And so I just went there and, you know, started putting in stuff that I liked. And then I would talk to the clients and other people and access songs that they like and just put it into the list. I took the picture from the book and posted it there and, you know, just started working it that way. I told myself that there was going to be a cutoff date. I was going to stop. I wasn't going to, you know, if I heard another song, I wasn't going to add it.
Yeah, because you can, that'd be the never ending story.
Right, right. And so, you know, I just feel like there's enough there for people to really, you know, connect with. You know, I didn't try to make it, you know, just because I love Yoruba music, of course. I love Ifa music, but I didn't want it to just be that. You know, I wanted it to be enough that we could connect with it and we could feel empowered. And if you wanted to step away from it, you could go back to it later and you might hear some rap music, you know, whatever you feel that really, you know, sets you in the mood, you know, for workings, because all of it may not be the same thing. Right. So you may have a chant one day and one day you might feel like you want to hear something with a little bit more boom to it.
Conjuring the Calabash.
Mm-hmm.
What does the title mean?
Well, a calabash, and I have one here. It's kind of like a shakery. Yeah. And so we think about the calabash in traditional African society, it can become a shakery. You can play it for music. You put a little skirt on it of beads, and so it becomes an instrument. Sometimes in ritual, it's sliced open and you use it to transport water or whatever types of other elements you want to use as part of your ritual. It becomes a sacred tool in that instance. The title itself, when we think about the calabash, we think about the upper half being male, the lower half being female. And so with that, there are lots of stories about the calabash. And so we think about the coming together of male and female. You know, the seeing of the world and how, you know, we can be disconnected at times. You know, we may feel like the men don't hear us and the men may feel like the women don't hear them. But there needs to be a coming together if we want to really save our universe, if we want to save our relationships, if we want to have our family last and have strength within our family, there needs to be a coming together of the two. And so when we think about it in terms of as an instrument, right, we hold the top. We're shaking the bottom and we're sort of tapping it. So there is that unison. And so for me, conjuring the calabash is about conjuring the energy of both that male and female, but also, but it's the woman who is the one who is allowing this to be, because we give birth, right? We're the ones who have to birth these people. And so that is a strong energy, you know, that we use. And so it was, it's just about, you know, using that energy to bring about change.
Where did you get all your ideas for your book?
Like I said, working with clients, the work that I've done since I was very young, my own, you know, ancestors, my grandparents, traveling, talking to my grandmother, listening, you know, doing a lot of listening. When I was very young, my grandfather loved to tell stories. But my brother and my sister, my brother wanted to play football. My sister wanted to just talk on the phone, you know, but I loved to listen to his stories. So for me, a lot of those stories, even when I got older, before he passed away, he kept a lot of stories in tablets and he would write them down. And so in his home, he had this china cabinet that was actually full of, you know, tablets with all of his stories on them. And so I remembered a lot of stories centered around spirit, because he would always ask, you know, what do you want to hear? Do you want to hear a death story? You know, and I always wanted to hear about spirit. And so the connection of spirit energy, how to deal with spirit energy. My grandfather lived in a home that prior to his moving into it, it was a funeral home. And so he lived there. And so you would always, when we would go visit, we could always see spirit. So there was always a lesson that he would teach in terms of how to protect yourself, how to deal with spirit, how to connect with spirit in such a way so that when you get older, it won't be cut off from you. My mother told me that too when I was young. She said, if you start screaming and acting like you're terrified, you know, it's done. It's ended, you know, and it'll have to wait for another generation, you know, to come and be, you know. For me, it was never that fearfulness, but it was, you know, if I can help you now, I will. But I still need time to be me. And I still practice that today, how to just give it space so I can do what I need to do with my family.
Who is the audience for your book?
The audience is everyone, naturally. People of color, first of all, because I think that, you know, we have been through a lot. And so, like I said earlier, the pandemic really shed light on how much anxiety, you know, we're feeling, especially women of color. I was reading a medical journal which said something like 30% of women of color are feeling like, you know, working in spaces where they're dealing with racism often and always, you know, that it's leading to heart attacks and strokes and things like that. So I think that generally is my audience, but I want people who are not people of color, white people, anybody to look at this book, and I want them to not, to just release all of those stereotypes, because we have a lot of stereotypes centered around people. And so I feel like it's an educational tool. It's, you know, you can actually see who people are, see what the magic is like. And don't rely on Hollywood or, you know, all of these other things that say the magic centered around people of color is, you know, just evil, inherently evil. And so I just wanted it to be an educational tool as well, so that we can really understand each other. So I think that it's open for anybody. I think if you really feel that you really want to know, you know, what hoodoo is like from my perspective, a person of color, then, you know, you look at the book, you pick it up, and you really get a meaty example of how that magic is expressed and how beautiful it is.
You mentioned you have clients. Who is your typical client?
There really isn't a typical client. I mean, I get a lot of men. At first, I didn't, before the pandemic, I would get maybe one or two males, kind of maybe 25 to 30 years old. African-American or, typically. But after that, it's been a lot more males, a lot older. So my typical client is probably between the ages of 18 and maybe 60. Yeah, 18 years old to 60. And so, and it ranges. Sometimes a daughter or a son may come for a reading. And then they'll tell their mother or they'll tell their father, and then they'll want a reading. So things like that typically happens. I've had several situations where it's been the whole family, right? It's been mom, you know, kids, even grandparents have come wanting, you know, and they've been mostly people who go to the church, you know, Baptist people, but they feel like there's something that's missing, you know. Oftentimes it's centered around just a recent death, right? Because, you know, in the Baptist church, when the person dies, that's it. There isn't a lot of talk for, especially in African-American communities, about spirit or ancestral spaces to set up. What I found is that for a lot of people, you know, just that disconnect, that residual energy comes up. Those ideas of there's got to be something more. Maybe I should be able to still connect. It shouldn't just be this is it, you know, cease everything. And so I've been getting a lot of people who come, you know, usually, like I say, after the loss of a relative, and they want to know what can they do. So we start talking about, you know, setting up altar spaces and things like that. And they're usually very open to that because they feel like, you know, there's a lot left unsaid and that they still feel the presence of this person. So there must be something there.
You said that you do readings, and that could mean many things. So tell us what your readings entail.
Well, it all depends. If I am doing what I consider as like more hoodoo, which is means that it's not based up under my Ifa, you know, it's not based upon their spiritual system, then that one would be usually people come for past life reading. And so that would entail me using my Black Mirror, dowsing rods, Lenormand, tarot. And so what I usually do is we start off by, I would have them take a picture in the morning. I always tell them, and the ladies, they really it struggle with this one, right? I say, when you first wake up, don't put on any makeup. I don't want to see any of that. Just take a picture of yourself. I'm not going to put it on social media. You know, I need that, right? And so I usually use that on my phone or on my computer with my mirror, my Black Mirror, because I explain to them that when I do past life readings, a lot comes up, right? A lot of residual energy from their life. And so what I try to focus in on, I sit and wait for what mostly resonates with where they are today. You know, the things that they're experiencing today that they're having difficulties with, that's where I stop and use my dowsing rods, my tarot, my Lenormand to find out, you know, what is going on in their life that they're struggling with, that they need to get past so that they can be more successful in their goals, you know, that they have set for themselves today. So we usually do that. If it's more Ifa, then, you know, it's the Opuele, it's using, you know, my cowrie shells and things like that to divine for them in terms of things that they're going to do that resonates with, you know, the Ifa, you know, with Eshu and Oya and different, you know, those deities under that system. So, but oftentimes things will overlap because I'll do a reading. And my ancestors, my spirit guides may say that I need to go to my Ifa, you know, and so I'll do something there as well. But I'll usually explain that to them. This does not mean that you have to be initiated into anything, but it just means that the energy that you harbor is an energy that is deeply rooted in that West African culture. So this is something that came up, you know, in terms of how to help you get past that so that you can be successful. So yeah, usually people come for past life. Lots of people come for that. And then they'll, you know, they'll, once they get to, you know, the prescription for that, they'll come back and they'll say, well, can I have an Ifa reading? You know, can I have something else, another divination? So yeah.
What is a Black Mirror?
Well, it is a mirror. It's a regular mirror that is painted black, right? It's black. And so it helps me to center in on, so when you look at, you can do it with a regular mirror as well. But for me, it helps me to really focus in on the imagery that comes through. I don't have to focus on my own face. So with the Black Mirror, looking into the Black Mirror, I sit there and then the images come through of what's going on in their own lives, their past lives, all these things that they've done. But I focus and stay focused until I see what pops out as the exact thing that they're doing right now that they didn't complete then or that they need some clarity on. And so the mirror itself, since it is all black, it allows me to, you know, sort of see these images in like a smoky room. It's almost like you're, and so you allow, wait for the smoke to sort of clear and then the images come through.
So it's a method of scrying.
Yes, it is.
Can you see your reflection in the mirror or is it painted all black?
It's painted all black. Let me show you. I have one here.
Oh, I see that. Yes. But you can still see your reflection.
Yes, yes, yes. What I do is I turn off all the light and I usually have candles on both sides. So when all the lights are out in my home, I'm usually not even focused on me. You know what I'm saying? And so my image goes away. And so what comes in is their life space, their energy.
You also mentioned a dowsing rod. Is that similar to a pendulum?
Yes, but there are two copper rods and, you know, I use it if I'm doing their past life readings and say, for instance, information comes up surrounding, their relationship, maybe with a mate then. So I will pull out my rods to ask, is this an area, you know, that they need to be working on today? You know, and so when the rods cross, I know for me that that is a yes, that is something that they need to work on. And then I may go back to the mirror and to see how it played out in the past. And so all this, I'm writing down or I'm using my recorder, you know, to record, you know, what I see, what's been said in terms of my rod. So all of this information I relay and I type it up and I send it back to them. What I usually tell them is to sit with it for 3 days. I say, read over it as much as you want. Really let it resonate because people have a tendency. They want to call back, you know, how do I do? Well, what this is, I say, sit with it for 3 days because usually a lot of those questions you already have answered. You know, the first time you look at it, you're thinking, okay, maybe I have a question, but you read it more than once, you know, and usually, you know, it eliminates a lot of the, you know, just those kind of quirky questions that we'll just toss out there. And so after that, we can talk again. Sometimes people are like, I get it. I know what I have to do because, you know, I give them a recipe of things that they need to do. And they'll say, okay, I'm going to follow that. And what I usually do, I say, well, let's talk back in a month then. For those people who say, I got it, I'm going to do it. Let's talk back in a month and see how you're doing. If they want to talk about it right after those 3 days, then we usually just talk about what's there. They'll usually then start to say, you know, I see that. I didn't want to see it, but I see it. And we talk about how they can heal those things and why they need to do what the prescription says. And we sometimes I talk about, you know, if it's not done, if they don't do it, you know, because sometimes if I'm sitting long enough at the mirror, it'll show some things that will happen. It'll show some things that, you know, will play out. It'll even show that it'll happen again in another life. And so when you talk to people and you say things like that, you know, then they're more apt to feel like, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go ahead and try to clean it up. And it doesn't always mean that just because they do what's there, that it's going to be perfect. It just means that, you know, that's something, that's one step that you don't have to, you know, just do again and again and again and again.
Do you do readings virtually or only in person?
Virtually. I do my Black Mirror and all that virtually. And I do, and I tell them I do it virtually because a lot of times I have to go to my shrines first. And so sometimes that may take a few days. So I let people know. I say, look, I'm going to do this reading, but I will let you know when I start. And I always do that. I text, I'll email, you know, I'm starting you right now because I have to do some work with my spirit guides as well. Because you never know who you're dealing with. You know, you never know how much protection you need, how much time, you know, your guides need to, you know, sort of get you ready to go. And so, you know, I always let them know, you know, when I start your reading, you know, this is why it took this amount of time because my guides needed me to go through this process. Everybody's different. Some people I can start immediately. Some people it may take a week because I need to go through my own process.
How can we find you on social media, especially if someone wants a reading from you?
The best place to go is to my webpage, right? So if you go to Mawia Bomani, Mawia Kai Eljamaa Bomani.com, right? My whole name and .com, then they can go to all of my social media platforms. And there is also a little link where they can sign up for reading. So that's there as well. I also list a lot of the different things that I do. So if you want a specific reading type, you can always say, you know, you want this. I've been doing some things for kids as well. Some people want, you know, some readings for their kids and things like that, especially since I talk about bullying and things like that in the book. So I do that as well. Yeah, they can just follow, go to my webpage, and then that's the easiest place.
I'll put your website in the episode notes because your website is a very long name. .com.
Yes.
Yeah. Is there a takeaway today before we finish this episode?
Yeah. I just would like people to know that, and this is for everybody. First, I want to go to, you know, when I talk about people of color, because, you know, even though, you know, as a Black woman writing this book, you know, there's still a lot of fear in our in the Black community around hoodoo. You know, colonization and being brought here and having Christianity forced upon us. You know, we look at our practices that are innately ours, right, as some form of devilment. And so I just really want us to examine our past, to really take some time and not just Google or Wikipedia things that say that's evil, that's wrong. Really find practitioners, people who, not just me, the other people out there who are serious about these practices. They write books about these practices and learn that way. You know, in any spiritual practice that tells you not to, it's probably not a practice for you. It's probably a cult, you know, more than anything, because I know that from growing up, you know, you have a lot of churches that will say, just don't do it. Don't go near it. You know, and that's not how we learn. You know what I'm saying? And if we're in a world where we want people to respect all people, you know, want us to respect our races, our sexuality and all these things, then we can't properly respect, properly learn if we don't educate ourselves about what's going on. So that I think that that's for all people. Just really be educated and then you can make smarter choices. It may still not be for you. You know, you may read it and say, okay, I understand what it is, but it's not my thing. But at least now you can make educated decisions and you're not running around town saying everything.
Right. I think it's important we should learn about everybody's practices.
Everybody's. Yes. 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 And, you know, and because, you know, like I say, you know, I grew up, you know, I went to Catholic school. I went to a Baptist church. I know those practices, you know. I mean, you know, learn. That's the only way you're going to ever be able to truly understand for yourself. And not have somebody dictate to you what's right, what's wrong.
You said that you're in Louisiana.
Yes, ma'am. I was born and raised in New Orleans. We moved to Shreveport after Hurricane Katrina, naturally. I go back and forth because I still have family. Everybody's there. So, yeah. But yeah, I'm in Louisiana.
The people I've spoken to who have lived in Louisiana or currently live in Louisiana say that the magical community is very big. Whatever you practice.
Yes, yes, yes. African-American people always say that it is the most African city in the United States, right? So yes, it is very big. It is very, very open. But, you know, that's in the southern region, right? In the northern region of Louisiana, it is very Bible Belt. So yeah, there's still that struggle. You know, when you move around, people will say, oh, do you practice voodoo? Or anything you do is voodoo. So yeah, so it's still that need to be educated.
People think they know about voodoo and they get it confused with hoodoo. They get those two confused, but they're very different.
Right, very different. They'll even say it's the same. They'll call it the same, voodoo, hoodoo. You know, they'll say that. They'll just put it into one phrase. But yeah, they're very, because we always tell people voodoo is a religion, right? It is a religion. It has its own set of practices. Hoodoo is not a religion. It is totally different. You can be a voodoo practitioner who practices hoodoo. You can do that, but they're not the same thing.
That's good for us to know. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I will put your website in the episode notes. And how can they find you on other social media platforms?
If they go to my webpage, that they can link up to all of them there. On Instagram, I'm on there a lot. Mawia Bomani, just my first and last name on there. Same thing with Facebook.
Thank you, Mawia.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. I'm glad I found you on Instagram.
And I love your name. I love your name. I just want to say
Well, thank you. So you know how I found you?
How?
Was I interviewed the death doula.
Mm-hmm.
She has her own podcast. And so I was just checking out her Instagram and I saw yours. I thought, I want that woman on my show. And I'm very gracious that you gave us your time to be here today.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for joining us for Witchcasting with Theodora Pendragon. Have a burning question or have a topic you'd love Theodora and her guests to discuss on the show? Contact her through Instagram at Theodora Pendragon. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next one. And help us spread the word by leaving us a rating and review and sharing it with your friends. See you next time, and may your magic always shine.